for them. You don't have to ask. For the
The South African government strongly condemns the series of explosions in Jaipur, India, died and those who've been injured. As part of our obligations arising from the membership of the UN, our country will next month host the visit of the UN Counterterrorism Executive Directorate, which task is to determine South Africa's ability to deal with threats associated with global terrorism. We have indicated our total commitment to cooperate to the fullest extent with this directorate and are confident that the steps that we have put in place to date are appropriate in our circumstances. And in this regard, we hope that the rest of the South African community and other political formations will also interact with this UN Counterterrorism Executive Directorate. Again, we remain very concerned about the situation in Myanmar. The latest official death toll following the cyclone stands at 31,000 dead and 34,460 people missing, but the non-governmental estimates are much higher than this. The international community has pledged massive humanitarian assistance. However, the UN Secretary General has indicated that they are not getting sufficient cooperation from the Myanmar authorities to help them to ensure that the assistance that they have, the international community has helped, can be effectively utilized. And therefore, it is estimated by the UN that at least 1.5 million people are at serious risk from starvation and disease because of the inability of the humanitarian organizations to effectively function in Myanmar. So the South African government urges the Myanmar authorities to end all the restrictions and allow the international community to function more effectively. In relation to the earthquake in China, the figures continue to be rising, and once again reiterate our condolences to the people and the families and the government of China, which has left tens of thousands of people dead and many thousands injured. Having said that, let me then just deal with our IRPS cluster strategic objectives. As you will recall, the minister yesterday identified the main objectives. One, consolidation of the African agenda. Two, the strengthening of South-South cooperation. Three, the strengthening of North-South cooperation. And four, participation in the global governments And five, strengthening of political and economic relations. Guided by what President Mbeki in his State of the Nation address said, under the theme business unusual, all hands on deck to speed up change, and he committed all of our government to, I quote, use the short period ahead of us further to engage our advance towards the realization of the all-important goal of a better life for all our people, including the need to, I quote, enhance our focus on key areas in terms of our systems of international relations with a particular focus on some African issues and South-South relations, unquote. It is therefore important to note that the IRPS cluster has tried to, within its broad framework of work, to try to see how we respond to the President's call. Today it is of particular concern that 14 years after having committed ourselves to a democratic society free of racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia and other forms of related intolerance, we now in our country are experiencing a rise in such incidents. This is especially worrying given our history and that South Africa hosted and presided hosted the World Conference Against Racism, Racial Discrimination, Xenophobia and Related Intolerance in 2001. And therefore, we are committed to implementing the program of action that emerged. Now, the UN has decided to convene a review conference which will be held in 2009 at a venue to be determined. What is of concern to us is that some countries are already spearheading a campaign to boycott the review conference, and we are very deeply concerned about this effort by some countries to try to sabotage the holding of the review conference given the nature of what we have to deal with. It is our view that the conference, review conference, must be held because we need, as an international community, to collectively implement the decisions taken at the first conference and help devise new strategies to uproot racism, xenophobia, and other related intolerance in our midst. Given the increasing attacks against foreigners in South Africa, it is our view that it is important that when dealing with this unacceptable phenomenon of attacks against foreigners, we should not, in a very instantly and in a sensational way, jump to the conclusion it is xenophobia. One must carefully study each incident to identify the root causes and determine whether criminals and other elements are not involved in organizing violence against foreigners. It is my view that the journalists have a very important responsibility to look at the recent developments in Alexandra, which has been a township of tremendous historical significance, to determine whether there are not other forces at play in inciting the violence against the foreigners in Alexandra. However, we do not want to underplay the increase in incidents of attacks against foreigners, and therefore we call for a much more deeper analysis of what we are experiencing. It is our view that it is important for all political leaders, not only government and the ANC outside of government, but all political parties and their leaders, the trade union leaders, religious leaders, the private sector, and other non-governmental organizations, to constantly work to educate our people about the dangers of xenophobia and racism. And I do hope that what we experienced recently in the last few days in Alexandra will reinforce our call that we've consistently made, that we cannot be complacent about the dangers that exist in all societies, and therefore we will work together to deal with this phenomenon. The second agenda item that we have to, of course, deal with, which is high on our policy objectives, is the consolidation of the African agenda. Zimbabwe has been with us for many while, and we've discussed it quite consistently. Simply to say that the election results now, and everybody had expressed their concerns about the delays in the announcement of the results, but now all the results have been announced. The opposition controls the House of Assembly. The Senate is split on a 30-30 vote, and the presidential election results have been given. It is my view that what the presidential, eventually the ZEC announcement of results, confirms to what everybody had practically predicted, with a difference of 0.1% here and there. And therefore it is our view that the runoff now, in according to what the agreement during the facilitation was, that you have to win 50 plus 1 or there must be a runoff, now has to take place. And we now really are hoping that we will commit SADC and everybody else, all those observers who will be invited, to really ensure that we have an effective presence that will determine that the runoff will be as peaceful as the elections that have just taken place. And I think it is now appropriate to congratulate all the people of Zimbabwe for the peaceful manner in which the harmonized, which were very difficult elections, the harmonized elections were conducted. It is our view that there are increasing reports about violence in the country, and we call on all parties to refrain from all acts of violence that could undermine the credibility of the forthcoming runoff elections. As you know, the facilitation dispatched 6 retired South African Defence Force generals, led by Lieutenant General Romano, to go to Zimbabwe to look at the allegations of the violence and make a report to the President. This report should be made to the President in the near future, and we hope that that will then serve as a basis on which we can deal with this whole issue of violence that is taking place in Zimbabwe at the moment. For us, once this runoff elections conditions are created and are held, we have to, together with the rest of the African SADC and the African countries and the international community, deal with the economic crisis that is engulfing Zimbabwe. And therefore, we as South Africa will renew our commitment to work within the framework of SADC to really make a major contribution to the socio-economic developments following the formation of a new government. It is our view, judging from the results, the Zimbabwean elected does want the leadership of the country to work together for the reconstruction and development of their country. It is our view that the Zimbabweans now have an opportunity, as Zimbabweans, to create their own future and create conditions for the future prosperity, peace and development of their country. We will, of course, make our maximum contribution to the efforts that the Zimbabweans request us to make. On Sudan, as you know, South Africa leads the AU's post-conflict reconstruction and development of Sudan. And the minister, as she said yesterday, visited Sudan recently with the AU delegation to assess progress in the implementation of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement and the post-conflict reconstruction development efforts. We do believe that there has been significant progress in the implementation of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement. However, many important challenges remain, including the failure to implement decisions of the Abyei Boundaries Commission, the slow progress in the redeployment of the security forces, the slow progress in the demarcation of the north-south border, as well as the establishment of electoral institutions for the national elections to be held in 2009. It is important that these issues are dealt with because it will impact on the outcome of the referendum, which is scheduled for 2001, and as you are aware, this referendum will determine whether the South remains part of a united Sudan or opts out for an independent southern Sudan. It is vital, therefore, that we must put in place all the conditions for the Sudan process to be implemented within the Comprehensive Peace Agreement. This is absolutely essential because of the strategic importance of Sudan, its mineral resources, and its impact on the stability and security of Africa as a whole. In this context, too, let me say that we remain seized with the situation in Darfur. We condemn the recent violence which has taken place outside Khartoum, reported to have been carried out by forces of the Justice and Equality Movement. It is our view that this recent attack, which is supposed to be carried out by JEM, will seriously impact negatively on the Comprehensive Peace Agreement and the Darfur Peace Agreement. The Sudanese government, of course, has accused Chad of supporting the JEM forces and now has broken off diplomatic relations with Chad, which complicates the situation in the whole region and indeed will make it more difficult for us to deal with the specific area of Darfur. We will continue to intensify our work to help capacity and institution building in Sudan. And I want to say again that to date we have trained 15 groups of over 700 government of Southern Sudan officials in the fields of leadership and governance, diplomacy and international relations, public service and administration, public finance, government systems of communication, correctional services, judicial services. We will enter into the third phase of this program in 2008. But it's clear that this is not enough. And we will therefore go into trilateral cooperation with the German government and UNISA in training Southern Sudan officials in the field of correctional services and legal affairs. In addition, the Norwegian government has donated 50 million rand for the specific training of the police in Sudan, and this project will be implemented this year. It is also important that Sudan and the United Nations African Union mission in Darfur have now finally signed the Status of Forces Agreement, which provides a legal framework for the activities of the military, police and civilian personnel of the United Force UNAMED. This is, as I said, a major development. However, we have to make sure that the necessary logistics are made available to UNAMED to ensure that it can effectively carry out its tasks in Darfur. The Department of Defense has deployed personnel as part of its new proposed AU-UN hybrid mission, and we've extended this mission to March 2009. In the Comoros, you know that we were not in favor of a military action to deal with the Comoros situation, but the AU took the decision, and now, following the recent AU-mandated military operation, it has now been decided that elections on the island will be held on the 15th of June, and we will watch this to see what contribution, if any, we can make to ensuring that these elections are held in a way that everybody will accept to be credible. In Burundi, our efforts to address the non-implementation of the ceasefire agreement between the government and the Paleputu FNL persist amidst clashes between these parties. The AU continues to provide the diplomatic umbrella to the presence of the South African troops for the demobilization, disarmament, and reintegration process, and is working consistently at the political level for the implementation of the existing agreement. A program of action has again been agreed to, and the regional initiative has requested South Africa, as I said previously, to continue with our facilitation, and therefore we hope that we can get the Paleputu FNL to seriously join in the talks and finalize these last steps that has to be taken. The South Africa has been requested to deploy the South African National Defense Force to the AU Special Task Force for Burundi, and we are going to, of course, our earlier mandate ended in March 2008, and it is clear that we will renew this mandate so that South African Defense Force can continue to be involved in that situation. It is our view that Paleputu FNL must have no illusions, that they cannot continue to delay the process of this final solution, and we should, with the rest of the international community, keep conveying the message that there is no way we can renegotiate the agreements that had previously been come to by between the then opposition party and the then government. Let me now deal with our other priority, and that is economic diplomacy. As you know, the latest World Bank report, while indicating that in some countries of Africa, especially sub-Saharan Africa, there's been a few years of consistent economic progress, and we've moved away from the negative development to the positive development. However, the World Bank report indicates that most of our countries in sub-Saharan Africa will not meet the Millennium Development Goals. It is our view that in order for us to try to meet most of our Millennium Development Goals, we have to intensify our South-South cooperation. This is becoming increasingly important because China, India are now going to be the major economic powers by the year 2015, and other major South countries, Brazil, Indonesia, Mexico, even South Africa, are beginning to become important players in the world economy. And this is why we will spend a lot of time on South-South cooperation as our program of action. And this relates especially with China. This year we marked our 10th anniversary of diplomatic relations with China. And we are committed to ensuring that what we have termed a strategic partnership with China will see itself manifested in much greater mutually beneficial economic relations. The minister has just been to China, where we've had extensive discussions on our relations with China, and the president will pay a state visit to China at the end of 2008. And we are, of course, making arrangements to participate in the Shanghai World Expo, which is scheduled for 2010. We are quite happy that China has taken the step to interact and initiate discussions with the dialogue group in Tibet while supporting China's territorial integrity. We wish them success in these discussions. Of course, it is clear that preparations for the Olympic Games, notwithstanding the recent earthquake, is going on very well. South Africa will have a major contingent at these Games, and we expect that our athletes will find a country quite friendly to South Africa, but there will be no special efforts to give them medals for no reason. So they will have to participate quite extensively. You have known, and the minister's briefing yesterday talked of the IPSA Dialogue Forum, which we were party to launching, and as I said previously, this is one of the most important forums of the South. It brings together India, Brazil, South Africa, three major players in three continents, which are becoming quite vital to the future of the international economic architecture. This forum is going very well. And the president in October will go to India to participate in the third IPSA summit, head of state. And the theme of this is Integrated Poverty Alleviation Strategy for IPSA, which is quite important for us because it does mean that we are beginning to narrow down our focus on what our interaction, not within IPSA only, but everywhere else, must take place in the context of our economic agenda and the South-South relations. We are very happy that a very successful Africa-India forum was held in India during April. And indeed, the agenda, which included climate change, also adopted a framework for cooperation in the economic, political field, science and technology, research and development, social development and capacity building, tourism, infrastructure, energy and environment, and media and communication. And what is important, that it was agreed that a plan of action will be formulated within a year with follow-up mechanisms to implement the framework to meet, and that this summit will meet every 3 years. So clearly, between IPSA, the Africa-India Forum Summit, we are beginning to build a very good foundation for South-South relations, and this is enhanced by the new Africa-Asia Strategic Partnership with South Africa and Indonesia host, and we are happy that we will host, possibly in February 2009, the Asian-African Summit, which will then allow us to come together with all the major players in Asia and Africa to determine our joint approach to helping us deal with poverty, underdevelopment, and sustainable development. Indonesia is expected to host a conference in June, July this year to deal with capacity building for the Palestinians. This will be initiated jointly by South Africa and Indonesia, and we hope this will help the Palestinian people to get the necessary capacity. There's also major developments in the Africa-Japanese relations, and the TICAD summit will be held in Japan on the 28th to the 30th May, and again the theme, as you'll see in the document, deals mainly with concretely trying to deal with issues such as market access for African products in Japan, Japanese foreign investment and overseas development aid to Africa, infrastructure development within the context of NEPAD, how we see all this in the context of our Millennium Development Goals, and climate change. But cross-cutting issues with China, with India, and now with Japan are all human resource development and cooperation in technology, which will serve as a major item on the TICAD summit. Of course, as you know, Japan will host the G8 summit, which the president in July this year, which the president will be attending. There are two sessions to this. The one is the outreach program, which South Africa with Brazil and Mexico and India and China are part of it, but there's also an outreach program for Africa. And it's expected that Japan will invite Algeria, Egypt, Ethiopia, Ghana, Nigeria, Senegal, South Africa, and Tanzania to participate in that program. So it's quite an important development in our relations also with Japan. We believe now we are bringing together, as I said earlier, all the different strands to ensure that we can move decisively forward in our economic issues. The minister yesterday dealt with global governments and our role in the Security Council. I'm sure when you get the document, you'll see that we believe we have made a major, it's been a major learning lesson for us in our 2 years in the Security Council, and we have made an input into helping to change the way the Security Council functions. The minister dealt with our votes on Iran and Myanmar, and I believe that we don't need to now start re-explaining that. As the minister said yesterday, one of the major issues now that we are facing in the international relations, which impacts on safety and security, stability, climate change and food crisis. But as you'll see in her document, she goes substantially into this, and we will spend a lot of our time with the relevant other ministers to deal with climate change and the food crisis that we experience. We're happy that the UN has established a food crisis task team, which is now working on a program which will be announced at a ministerial meeting which will be held in Rome in June, and we hope this will enable us to begin to have a holistic approach to the food crisis in the context of the climate change crisis, all in the context of how we meet our Millennium Development Goals. We believe that in the last few years, South Africa has made its mark on the international relations, and in the coming years, we will continue to build on a very strong foundation that has been laid. I do believe that we are now past some of the most difficult challenges we face in the Security Council and on the African arena, and now it's time to build on what we have created, I think, on a very solid foundation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Colleagues, that briefing can now go to questions made. Cape Town?
Gay Davis, 702 Cape Talk. Deputy Minister, the Zimbabwe situation has indeed been with us for a long time. Just in terms of, can you just tell us how confident you are that it's even possible to have a credible runoff, given the violence which our own generals have described as something that has really shocked them to have seen? And so if you could also at the same time then just explain on the kind of conditions that you say must be created for the runoff to take place. If you could just spell those out in specific detail for us, thank you.
Put all the Zimbabwe questions together, yeah. Because I'm sure we're going to be limited to that.
Okay, and any other questions, Mpumi?
Mpumi, I understand the terms on the Zimbabwe issue. I'd like to know, Minister, what was the rationale of the President sending generals? When didn't he send ordinary civilians? Was there a specific reason? Or
any other questions, Angela?
The Deputy Minister, 2 weeks ago when the President met the clergy from Africa, he took them into their confidence and he was quite concerned about the US and the British. I think if I recall correctly, he was saying that they effectively undermined his efforts at brokering some sort of deal. But of particular interest was his complaint that the Americans had somehow influenced the MDC to renege on an agreement. Could you just elaborate? What exactly did the Americans do? What was this agreement that the MDC had and that they then broke? Thank you.
Any other question? Pretoria? Nothing on the move. Okay, give me a minute.
I think, despite a lot of skepticism, what the facilitation managed to achieve in ensuring that the last harmonized elections took place, where nobody has challenged, including the European Union, that the conditions were sufficient for the will of the people. I think the result justifies. There was a lot of skepticism during the results of doctoring, the election results, and when we tried to explain, but it was very difficult because under the facilitation it had already been agreed that out every polling booth would have the results put in. Everybody in a way had those results quite put together, so the chances for doctoring those results were also not there, but there was a lot of speculation. It's difficult for me to understand where the informed sources come from and who, what the information based on. But we remain quiet but consistently confident that the conditions had been created under the facilitation for elections to take place where the majority of Zimbabweans would go and vote, those who did vote, feeling quite confident that they could do so without any interference and within a framework that nobody has challenged. Given that, I believe that there has been some increase in information coming out and reports coming out of violence in Zimbabwe. And so the decision to send generals, I suppose, is based mainly on the allegations that it is the military personnel and the war veterans that have been deployed in all areas of Zimbabwe to carry out these reports of intimidation. I suppose the generals who have had their own experiences in South Africa during our black-on-black violence And during that period, when we went through a very nasty two-year, three-year period on black and black violence, with their experience, might be better than civilians to go into areas to determine exactly what the nature of the allegations are and verify the allegations. So I don't think it was the generals against civilians. I think the feeling was must have been that the generals, given their own experience in South Africa on black violence, could go and be able to deal with what the allegations were. The conditions that must be created, I think, is similar to what was agreed to by the two parties, three parties, the formerly two MDCs and ZANU-PF government, to ensure that there is no violence, the media is not, you know, media freedom is there, freedom of assembly is there, and all the other factors that made the first harmonized elections take place. If you read the SADC Observer report, it had indicated that despite what everybody has accepted were better conditions, there were certain things that must be looked at for future elections. But I think this is not a matter for the runoff because the time doesn't allow that. So the conditions are there. They were created short of now the new allegations of violence. The conditions that led to the results of the last election, harmonized elections, are the conditions we must try to work on and, if possible, see whether they can be improved. So the SADC observers must be there in large numbers. Previously, there were observers from the AU, there were observers from Asia, Latin America, other sub-regions in Africa, ECOWAS, etc., and indeed Russia and few other countries, China, were invited. If there can be sufficient observers, like in the past harmonized elections, then those will help us to be confident that at the end everybody will accept that the people's will was manifested. If there is any substantiation of the violence coming from the general's reports and other reports, then it's up to the facilitation to see how he deals with this, to try to get an agreement by all parties that we will take steps to end any violence that has been perpetrated. That will help add to that other conditions that were... The violence were not there during the harmonized elections. They've only seemed to have been happening after the harmonized elections. I'm not aware of the... I was out of the country as in I just come back. I don't know of the president's meeting with the African clergy, and I don't know where a report of an internal meeting of his expressed concern for other governments' involvement and especially the pressure on the MDC would have come from. It is our view that we must create the conditions. Well, maybe Ronnie was here, he can explain that. I wasn't here and I don't know that. Because I don't want to deal with situation that I'm not fully aware of. But it is our view that if, for instance, you want UN involvement, this matter can be taken to the General Assembly. The General Assembly can decide. But we start from the premise that we don't know what has not been done sufficiently by Africa to enable us to be confident, at least through the harmonized elections, that we were able to ensure that the elections were able to allow the people of Zimbabwe to determine their will. I don't know personally of other external involvement. All we are arguing for is let Africa deal with their problems, and in the context of an African program, let other countries get involved in assisting the Zimbabweans to solve their own problem. It is our view that every time we begin to interfere in the Zimbabwean situation in a way that is not helpful, only allows the situation to get more problematic. And we would be much happier if this matter is left to the Africans to deal with. And if anybody wants other outside of Africa involvement, then let them follow the necessary procedures either through the AU, the SADC, and see whether they want some other international mediation. But I want to add, it's wrong to say there were no other international observers. There were many. There were 40 different international observers. And if the European Union and the United States and maybe one or two other countries were not invited, That is a decision of the Zimbabwean government. In South Africa, we would invite anybody who wants to come and observe our elections. But it'd be wrong to suggest that there were no other international observers in during the last elections. And if you go through the list, they are a very impressive group of 41 observers, and I don't know why we need many more observers. Why don't we just continue to see? If the situation is as it gets out of hand, and if people feel they want the United Nations, then the process is to go to the General Assembly. I've not heard of anybody who has taken this matter to the General Assembly. In fact, I've not even heard in the recent statements when the opposition announced that they will participate in the presidential election, they called in for an international observer mission. So we are willing to get everybody's support, but let it be based on an African agenda. And let it be based on what the Zimbabweans themselves are asking. Let's not try to impose on the Zimbabweans what we think is best for them. That would be our interpretation. We think it's got us as far as we've got, and that's the process we will stick to. Well, I said that if they have that feeling, then they must follow the procedures. And you know that Morgan Tsvangirai was in Angola to meet with the chair of the Troika on stability, peace, and has met with Kikwete of Tanzania, the AU. So there have been extensive discussions. What seems to be sometimes forgotten, that the MDC briefed the SADC Extraordinary Summit, both presidential candidates, Tsvangirai and Makoni, and there was an extensive three-hour discussion with them. And they've been moving throughout SADC countries quite easily, explaining their positions. There's been no attempt to stifle MDC from putting their positions to the relevant structures.
Okay. Thanks, Deputy Minister. Any further questions? Angela?
Just clarity now. Is this follow-up from Zimbabwe or are these separate, different questions?
Different questions. I think we're done with Zimbabwe.
No, no, there was just another question of clarity. Just, I'm not too sure. The report of the generals, of the South African retired generals, are you saying it hasn't been made yet to the president? I wasn't quite sure what...
No, they expected to have, during this week, to have completed the report to submit to the president at Foreign Affairs, because that was a facilitation initiative, and so we will be informed as soon as the report is ready. But it's expected this week.
Okay. Deputy Minister, in Dublin on Monday, we've got the international conference. I just wondered, what is our position on this whole issue of a total or a partial ban on cluster bombs? Have we changed our position at all? I know we were in favor of partial ban, but are we going to see a new dawn in our attitude?
Well, you know, we've been the leading players before we were even Democratic South Africa on the issues of weapons of mass destruction, proliferation of small weapons, etc. This is a debate that I think it's a question that we are discussing between us and other relevant government departments to try to get a sense of how we can handle this matter. There is an argument in many countries that even landmines, which we spearheaded, the campaign for the banning of landmines, that in war situations is necessary. There is some argument that cluster bombs, very well controlled, is necessary. But this is a matter that we have to finalize amongst us before we go to the Dublin conference. It's a matter we're discussing.
Okay, any further questions, Pretoria? Yes, Louis, proceed.
Minister, France, Britain, the US are pushing for the UN Security Council plan or movement or possible action to force Myanmar to accept international aid. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown said this morning that he's going to ask for an emergency summit of the UN to take up the issue. What is South Africa's stance on this being? Would you support or oppose such action?
No, as my minister indicated yesterday, the earlier debate on whether this matter should be a matter of the Security Council or ECOSOC, and it was not that we were opposed to the discussion on this issue. We were saying that ECOSOC brings together all the countries, whereas the Security Council only brings together members of the Security Council. As I said when I interviewed the topic, we are calling on the Myanmar government to really move much more effectively to remove all restrictions. And we are really urging them, and we would support all the efforts to ensure that the humanitarian assistance does reach Myanmar without any further restrictions, and all the Myanmar authorities must now cooperate fully with the humanitarian agencies and the United Nations. That would be our view on that.
Deputy Minister, further questions? Bume.
I wanted to explore a different issue here. The minister spoke about our relations with China and that there will be a state visit later on in the year. I'm just wondering, Minister, whether the issue of the controversial ship hasn't affected our relations with China. And, can you explain about that?
No, we discussed this matter when we were in China recently. And before the public announcement was made, we were told that this ship had been recalled and was returning to China. As you recall, we ourselves as Foreign Affairs only heard about this issue when it hit the newspapers. It was a matter under the line function of SARS, which falls under Treasury, and we referred this matter to Treasury. By the time I reached China, I heard from the Chinese that they had recalled the ship. I had heard that there were civil society actions in South Africa, and indeed there was a court action. But clearly, in the present conditions, the Chinese authorities themselves felt that it was in their best interest to recall the ship back to China. And we have nothing else to say. It was their bilateral deal with the government of Zimbabwe, which they claim had been come too long before the elections, and therefore when they told us they were asking the ship to return to China, we welcomed their information. It has not affected our relations with China, no.
Okay. I guess that was the last question. I see everybody is satisfied. Pretoria and Cape Town. Okay. On that note, thank you very much, Deputy Minister, and thanks very much to all members of the media.
Thank you, people.